How's everybody on this 4th of July?
Pretty good. Happy Independence Day!
That's right. You look like somebody that would say that in your photo.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, even though you're the Bride of Frankenstein, it kind of could look like just because it's circular and you can't see it very big, it could be
You know,
somebody.
I'm talking to you guys all the time, and it's a good thing I'm catching up on DC everything else, because I don't know what you guys get up to when I'm not around, And here I've been talking to you guys all this time and not knowing that Mike compared Rob's face to a butthole. And I would have never known. You guys have been getting along just perfectly.
Was that sideways pucker. It looked like a butthole. It was a compliment. I mean, he's cosplaying as Arseface. Yeah.
Oh, there you go.
There you go.
How is
I
everyone
only tease the ones I love, as Barb
doing?
knows that. If I don't bother to tease, I just don't. Yeah.
My God. Everyone's doing well today?
Yeah, I've been up since 6 a.m. I already cut the grass.
Are you
Nice.
serious?
That's why I was listening to you guys while I cut the grass.
Wow.
It's 4:30 a.m. I was up since. I beat you.
I woke up at 7.
Yeah, actually it was better than yesterday, 'cause with the normally Mabel sleeps in a crate next to our bed. It's all made up nice for her and stuff in there, and that's where she normally sleeps, but with the fireworks going off, we let her stay underneath the underneath our bed, which is her hiding place.
Aww.
And it's, I mean, there's room for her under there, it's,
Yeah.
but that's her safe spot. And so we just let her stay under there because the fireworks were still going off when we went to bed. And
Oh my God, they were crazy last night around my neighborhood too. Like in
yeah,
the
and
4th of
it's
July.
tonight's gonna be bad too. I just
Yeah.
can't. It's just.
I think that a lot some I mean not a lot of places are doing fireworks, but I saw in the paper there was a few actual communities hosting them yesterday for whatever reason instead of today. I don't know why, but
Yeah.
well you have kids, so what are you gonna do?
we're going to Stacy's mom's, gonna have a just like burgers and hot dogs and stuff, and then I'm not sure what, if anything, we're going to do for fireworks. There's really not anything nearby
Yeah.
that's going on. I mean, we could nearby their house anyhow. We could drive out somewhere, but there's maybe like five places doing it where, usually several places in each town are usually have them, but most of them are canceled still this year. What about you?
I don't care anymore. Like I there were
Yeah.
times when I had joy with fireworks, like a
Yeah.
lot of joy, like bottle rocket wars and stuff, but I don't like them anymore. Like I'm at that point, like I don't care.
See,
And Har it's
that's how I
nice.
am.
It's nice with Harley because before Scooter and Risa, they would go nuts. I mean, it would scare the shit out of them. And
Yeah.
it was very uncomfortable. And Harley doesn't give a fuck. I mean, she
Latte is
just
the same way. She doesn't even,
like she doesn't
like, you
even
don't, she
budge.
doesn't react. It
And
like she
you
doesn't
know
even hear
high-pitched smoke detectors would drive a normal dog nuts. She doesn't
him.
even care. She just sleeps right through it. It's like I think she's part deaf. I really do.
Maybe.
Yeah, I wish Mabel didn't care, but
Yeah.
because she does, and our prior dog Luna, she wasn't as bad as Mabel, but she definitely did not like them, and it's made me an enemy of fireworks. I
Yeah.
wish I had like a drone that I could
Knock them
scan
out of the sky.
the neighborhood and just like blow up people's houses. How do you like fireworks now, buddy?
Yeah, Oh, I saw the latest Purge, man. Oh, it was so good. God
Yeah,
dang, I love those
you went to
movies.
the theater again,
It
huh?
was my favorite. Why have you been to the theater? I think three
I
times
know.
already.
Yeah, you promised us you weren't going at all in 2021.
No,
You
I
lied.
said to a
You lied
con.
to everyone.
I didn't say to a movie. I said to a con.
Oh,
I didn't
okay.
say to a movie.
Gerald said not to a movie, but he wants to see, or he did
Oh,
see
he
Fast
did go
and
see
Furious.
Fast and
Yeah.
Furious. He
So
didn't
he's a
like his
liar.
experience, but our experiences at the early morning features, they haven't been busy.
Yeah.
Like even though they've opened up full, there we had like four seats between us, and it was very similar to when COVID was still had some rules.
Yeah, I want to see Black Widow. I gotta see if Stacy
Yeah,
wants to go.
we already bought our tickets for Black Widow.
Cool.
Yeah,
Yeah,
we're going
if
to
we
that
do go,
next
I'd want to
weekend.
go in the early afternoon when it's not, like you said, not quite so busy.
Yeah. Yeah, this is my favorite Purge, the Forever Purge.
I've only seen the first one.
The premise of this one was, okay, the timer goes off, but it keeps on going.
Robber?
Yeah, that's why it's called the Forever Purge.
Oh.
The United States has gone into turmoil, and I like the I love the premise of them like twisting the borders around, like Canada opening the borders to United States so people can escape, and then New Mexico doing the same. Like it's insane. They like flip
Yeah.
the they send a very strong political message without in a vibe of a horror movie, you know?
Yeah.
It
Yeah.
it's crazy. But yeah, I
Well, you
absolutely
haven't
loved it.
watched Handmaid's Tale. Obviously, that's a very political message, meant to be a political message.
Yeah,
But it's the same thing. There's
that
an
was too
inter
slow for
there's
me. It
a
was a little
government in
too
Toronto. There's an American government still existing in Toronto because, there's no more United States in that.
Yeah. I might one time watch it, but man, there's just too much to watch. There's too much streaming to watch. And then I got into the Star Wars Bad Batch, so I'm all caught up on that. And almost caught up on Loki, which so far is my least favorite, but
Me too.
I've never been like a time jump kind of thing. Like I've never been like a huge fan of that, like just in general.
Yeah.
But I
I
do
did like
like
the last episode.
yeah,
I thought that.
I like Owen. What is his name? Wilson? Is it Owen or the other one? I
Yeah.
can't
No,
remember.
I think it's
No,
Owen.
I just like him as an actor, and he's sort of playing himself, you know, with his sar it's so it's like watching Zoolander. Kind of. And I kind of like that because he kind of like lightens up the, I don't know, some of the tone, and his wit is still there.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I'm enjoying him quite a bit, but of the three, I still think WandaVision was my favorite. Falcon and Winter Soldier, best action, definitely. But I sure love that sitcom. But
Me and you are on this exact same page. It's so far the Marvel shows have gone from bad, and don't get me wrong, I still like Loki, but in terms of how I prefer them from most entertaining to least entertaining, but not to say that I don't like Loki. It's just going in that direction because
yeah.
Scarlet Witch is my favorite.
Well, Scarlet Witch was like, I don't know. Maybe you had to be there, like, you know, you're getting up there in age there, Rob. So you knew all these sitcoms like I did. So
Yep.
I think you had appreciation for like how they started with like the 50s sitcom and kind of
Oh, 100%.
worked their way up. Where some people are probably like in the Marvel world, like, I don't give a crap about this. You know,
Yeah,
bring
what
the
is this black and
superheroes.
white
Yeah,
thing?
yeah. And I thought it was like an amazing thing of how to bring it back in somebody's mind, you know. It's almost like that TV show on HBO many, many, many years ago when they first started doing original programming called Dream On. It was about the guy that watched TV and he was influenced by everything he watched because his parents would just sit him in front of a TV. Well, that's kind of like what Wanda was sort of living an ideal world through VHS tapes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's cool.
So yeah, it was cool.
Mike, I have a quick question for you with comic base in general. Set aside the issues for that you had this week. When and you might not be able to answer it because I think you might have said that you don't really turn off your computer.
Yeah.
I actually, since I started working from home regularly, I only have one keyboard, one mouse, one monitor, so I and one internet connection. So I switch back and forth during the week. So I turn off my personal computer, and then I reconnect everything and turn it back on. It takes sometimes like a half an hour from when I turn on my computer for when Sidekick will actually open up and start doing anything for me. I don't know if you've experienced any time where
I
you've had to turn it off
I
or.
don't do that, but you can also open up Sidekick and then kick it off manually.
No. That's what I'm trying to do. And
Oh,
it
okay.
just won't respond for a half an hour.
Oh,
But
that's
I think part of it is the computer's getting older, but it definitely is the
Yeah.
program too, because I can open up other stuff, after, just a handful of minutes, but not that. It just won't do anything. It
Yeah,
won't respond. Like almost a half an hour.
this is the way I prefer to run Comic Base, but you got to remember that I don't have to toggle my computer on and off. I leave my
Yeah.
computer on all the time,
See, that's what
and
I would do otherwise.
I leave Comic Base up, which makes Sidekick sort of inoperable, except
Yeah.
on like Wednesday and Thursday because I know I'm going to be scanning books in, so I kind of let Sidekick do its thing. But I'll just kick it off through the application to get
Gotcha.
updates. But I like the fact that I can save to the cloud, because if I lose my computer, I could just go grab a new computer and grab my database, which is probably
Yeah.
my most important thing on my computer, I'll be
Me
honest
too,
with you.
by far.
That and the
Yeah,
guesser
totally.
script.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's I don't know.
Okay.
I like Comic Base, and they did resolve my problem. It was on their end, but yeah, I
Huh.
don't like when
Yeah.
I can't get an update on Thursday because by Sunday, when I do scan in all my books, I like it to be there, and it can't really shift to any other day because Sunday's my comic maintenance day.
Yeah, yeah.
That's when and last week I had two boxes because I was on that trip. Well, I actually had three boxes in 1 week.
My
And
God.
I feel almost a short box in one box. So you can imagine having to process three short boxes worth of comic books in 1 week.
That's like, what is a short, what they hold like 150 comics, right?
No, it's more than that.
Is it?
Yeah.
Oh my God.
This
I
is
mean,
a
I was
drawer
going to say, even
box,
with
though. It's
150.
I think the drawer box are
Oh, the drawer, you got the drawer
a little
boxes.
deeper than the
Okay.
standard
Wow.
short.
That's a lot of comic books.
Yeah.
You should think about going digital only for Marvel.
I am thinking about some of them. Like, I'll probably keep a few.
Always goes well.
You just won't, yeah, because you won't have a complete collection
I don't
anymore
want to
of.
make any commitments though. This time I'm not sticking to, so I made a couple of things, but I haven't made any decisions other than get rid of the variants, and
Yeah.
I'm going to get out of the collected editions for the most part.
Come on. No more collected editions.
No, just for the ones that I am really continuing on, because the collected editions are all collected. I mean, in reality, I can pop open my iPad and read them on Marvel app.
Oh, gotcha. Yep.
So it doesn't the collected edition experience, I'll miss, but man, they take a lot of fucking room, man.
They take a lot of room. They are nice to have and to read that way, but I've like myself, I've a couple times when I've already spent like I can see the month's order growing higher and higher, and I have like I think it was this past month, like the Hickman, they re-released the Hickman Fantastic Four Omni Volume 1. I'm like, I'd really love to have that, but I can still read it anytime I want. So it's like, and my bill was already getting up to be too high. I'm like, I can't do another $75 or what it would have been. So,
well, Hickman's like Avengers and Fantastic Four I've loved. His X-Men conceptually I love, but he doesn't seem as in control. Like, I don't – they're so – Chris said this, and I listened to your last podcast, and he said so decompressed that – like, I just read, like, this morning 4 issues of – X-Factor, and I was like, holy crap, they're still having the many deaths of Siren? Like, it's not, it's not really pushing the needle. Like, holy mackerel. I mean, it's not that I'm not entertained. I'm entertained, but
yeah,
it's like, you're not moving it. You're not moving it. And if I look at, I'm reading a lot of the X-Men titles now just on the app, even though I have the comics. But I'm going through all of the lower ones, and I have to say that Marauders so far – I haven't read X-Men proper. I'm on it now. Mm-hmm. But Marauders is by far a comic that I always want to read. Like, it just – every issue has something that grabs me.
I think – I mean, there's a few of them that I really love, but the X-Men proper and Marauders are two of the tops for me. X-Force is probably up there as well. But yeah, I totally agree with you. The only thing that I would say, Mike, is that the way that you're reading them could affect your enjoyment because of how they're kind of set up. They're almost made to be read all in the order that they're coming out between all of those X-Men comics, even though obviously
they each have their own stories. But you don't, they're all, I don't see any underlying ties other than X of Swords.
But you had an issue a while back with one of those events suddenly interrupting the flow.
Well, that's because it was
ridiculous. I think if you would have read the whole thing,
though, it was I was in the story, and then X of Swords just, it comes in and like derails it. Like, it's not even like a gradual merge. Like, it's not, it's like, okay, here's the X of Swords. And now the islands that I introduced that were fucking in X-Men are now at war, and they have these swords, and these X-Men have to go get these swords.
I just feel like if you would have read them all in the order that they were released, that you might not have felt that it was so abrupt.
No, I might read it again, but it seems real abrupt.
Like, I'm actually thinking of buying those trades that they're releasing that put them out that way, that it's not just by title.
Yeah.
I think they're all called Reign of X trades, and they just release them in waves, you know, with all of the issues that came out that, you know, for that month or whatever.
Yeah.
If I do want to reread them, I'll reread them in that order again, but I don't know. It depends.
I like New Mutants, too.
New Mutants is good.
That's the other one that I – New Mutants, X-Men, and Marauders. But Marauders – man, Marauders has that, like, 90s feel to me. Like, it just feels like it flows. And the other ones don't. And even in the Marauders, though, in the X of Swords, like, it was interesting. Like, because it – she had to go to, like, Wakanda to get the sword, Storm.
Oh, Storm did, yeah.
Yeah, that was probably the best issue in that whole thing of X of Swords. Like, just the conflict of having to ask her friends for a sword that they couldn't give her. Like,
she knew she had to take.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was, yeah, was good. Best. I mean, that was, like, the best instead of, like, Wolverine and where it's not, I don't know. I'm not crazy. Like, Wolverine, I like and I enjoy. I like the vampire thing. I like this, you know, the was it the Omega Red?
Yeah.
You know, whole theme in there and the Colossus stuff. But it's not one of my top for sure. I enjoy it. And then Sword
Sword
is so weird because it's like, what are you? Like, why do you exist? Are you... Are you a Krakoa thing, or are you a Venom thing? Like, are you King of Black, or like, I don't know what you are.
Yeah, that launched at the wrong time because it went right into that King
That
of
kind of
Black.
felt like Superboy, like in the New 52. Like, they didn't know if it was Teen Titans or like, it was always just, it wasn't, it never got to identify its own comic. Like,
I think
so.
they suffer a lot of times when that happens.
I mean, the art is great, and I like Manifold. I mean, that's one badass mutant. I can't believe he's not an Omega, but yeah, it's, I don't know. There's that's something I could read digitally and be perfectly happy, I think.
Yeah. Well, that's good. I mean, that's what I mean, you can read it digitally for free with the money you're paying already. So, I mean, that's great and saves you room too.
Yeah. But anyway, we read a lot of retro books. At least I did.
I read some retro books.
And I read one that led me down a rabbit hole that I was like, how the hell am I going to afford these books? Because they're outrageously expensive. And I had ordered from Aaron Myers two comic books that were in G.I. Joe. And they were around the 130 area, like the 138 and 39, I think. Let me see. Let me go there for sure. But man, this is like totally 90s goodness. Like I freaking love this shit. But I can't get enough of it. And the plot was so intriguing, and the art is like where I want it. Instead of your six panels, and it's more like 90s where they can go wild and they can be inventive on their panel layouts and all that stuff. But I really like this Andrew Wildman. Like, I think he goes by Goose or something like that. He used to do like Silver Sable, but in this arc, he's like doing a G.I. Joe, a real American hero. And I read 137 and 138. And this plot is wild. And one came polybagged with the card. The card kind of sucked, but the whole polybag looked really cool. I popped that open and read them. And this arc is just so intriguing to me because Scarlet is working for Cobra, and she's so ingrained into Cobra that only Hawk and Stalker know about it. And Cobra Commander has taken over Castle Destro. Like, he wants to kill Destro and Baroness. So I'm like, what is happening? I want to know what's going on. Like, this is just crazy because the villains are the villains. And then Storm Shadow is working with Snake Eyes, which is coming to the theater this month. I'm gonna go see that for sure, Snake Eyes. But yeah, there's so much going on, and then I got to the last page, and then there's Transformers, and I'm like, what the hell is going on? But I really like the way they did it because Scarlet is like so convincing that she's turned, and then when the Cobra Commander says you have to go kill Hawk. So it looks to everybody that like Hawk and Stalker are killed and burned alive, like to a crisp. And they fake their deaths, and then but everybody thought they were dead. And Hawk says no, he has to tell Snake Eyes what's going on. Most of the G.I. Joes don't know what's going on. So there's she's so deep undercover that not a lot know. And then he sends. Like Hawk is pretty twisted because he sends Snake Eyes on this mission to go save Destro and Baroness from the castle, and the castle has these like levers which are awesome. It like you can Cobra Commander thinks you can shift it in two modes, like you can make it Castle Destro or Cobra Command. Like it like morphs itself like into different buildings, and Cobra like Destro knows that you can like tweak it to like put them to the midpoint. And you like shift it into this weird configuration where it's not quite anything. And that's what he does so he can try to escape his own castle from all of Cobra. And he calls G.I. Joe and says, can you rescue me, him and Baroness? So they send Snake Eyes and Storm Shadow to go make the rescue. They rescue him. And during that process, Scarlet's there on the roof. And she gets into it with, like, she's going to shoot Snake Eyes. And Snake Eyes drives just like in Elektra fashion, right, where Elektra's stabbed, you know, like by Bullseye. He drives a sword like right through her heart, and you're like, oh shit, she's dead. And you're like, holy crap. But he's smart enough to like know where her heart is and make it like as non-evasive as possible. So she's alive, but now Cobra Commander really believes that she's in Cobra. So, like, I don't know what's going on. And at the end, they have a Decepticon. And I'm like, what is happening? I don't know what is happening.
How did you read this?
In a physical. I bought them from Aaron.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I bought 137 and 138. And they're by Larry Hanman and Andrew Wildman. And, God, I like this Wildman's art. Like, I wanted to go back and get it. So I went to my comic shop and I was poking around and I'm like, man, these are $30 an issue. And they don't even have them in stock. They're like on consignment.
I don't think anyone was buying G.I. Joe back
then.
Well,
it's like, I don't know how to get these issues. Like, I don't know how to. You can find like 1 through 100 pretty easily, but
yeah,
some of these other ones are hard to find. And I want to know what's happening. Like, there's so much going on, and I'm so engrossed that I want to know what's happening. That I had no option to buy a lot of the ones that I wanted. So
yeah,
this morning, I found out that IDW put out these trade paperbacks. I was getting the collected hardcovers, but they didn't go that far. They only got to almost 100.
Mm-hmm.
And they put out these classic G.I. Joe trade paperbacks, and I bought like some of the ones right before this and then some of the ones right after. But I couldn't get the Transformer volume because that's sold out too. Like, I can't find it even on eBay.
Wow.
So I can read everything prior, but I don't know if going forward if I'll be able to find one of the volumes. But yeah, this got me like excited. Like, I wanted to keep going.
Yeah, you know, I was just looking in the database, and like I never really investigated before, but starting with 135, it looks like they probably were struggling with sales, and G.I. Joe is very small on the banner. It says G.I. Joe starring Snake Eyes.
Yeah. Yeah, like the cover
yeah,
I have
on interesting
137
too.
Says starring Snake Eyes and versus Scarlet.
Mm-hmm.
And 138 is when he actually stabs her through the heart, but you can see Baroness and Destro are working together.
Yeah.
And it's an interesting cover because these actually appear in the comics, the covers. So that's give props, because if you look at the cover with Destro and Baroness on it, you could see the shifting of the building. Do you see how it looks like Eschner or whatever his
yeah.
name is? That's that's the Castle Destro shifting.
Mm.
Like when he puts the levers in a certain configuration. And then there's some G.I. Joes like I just, God, I didn't even know existed.
Yeah, I was out. I collected G.I. Joe up until issue 78. And then I picked it up just in the past, like, 4 or 5 years with the current IDW stuff. So all of those like later ones, I probably have never heard of those Joes before.
Yeah, this is some interesting stuff for sure. And it's hitting that I've been into the 90s stuff pretty hardcore, and it's hitting that funny bone of mine that says, holy mackerel, I'm just enjoying it. I'd recommend
I had no
it.
Idea that they teamed up with Transformers again so late, you know, in the run. They have that miniseries.
Well, I thought it was the miniseries, but I had no idea it happened within this comic book.
I had
Do you know what
no
I mean?
Idea either.
Yeah.
That's interesting. That's really cool.
Yeah, it was fun read. I was dying to read the next issue, and I'm like, oh, well, how can I do this? I didn't even check Comixology. It's possible.
Yeah,
If they
probably
put
not very likely.
out the trade, then it's possible it's there for IDW. I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, you're right. It's possibly. I just find it amazing Larry Hama's done like the entire run since 1982.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I didn't realize that he was part of the DC implosion. Like, he got fired from
Oh, I didn't know
DC
that either.
from DC, and that's how he got over to Marvel because of the implosion. Like, he was on staff there
Oh,
and
wow.
got fired during the implosion and then went over to Marvel, so. And I've always liked his stuff. Like, I got into G.I. Joe in the IDW run. And I started reading the Larry Hama one and then all the other stuff like Cobra and the modernized G.I. Joe stuff. And I like it. I liked it a lot. I liked what they were doing. But Larry Hama has that old school plot thread stuff going on.
Oh, 100%,
And
man.
I
You have to be paying attention.
yeah, he's got like four or five things going on like at once. And I love that style. Like, that's why I love DeFalco. Like, it's like,
That's definitely my favorite style of
A
comic
hundred
writing.
percent. A
Yeah,
hundred percent.
it makes you more like soap opera invested because there's always like two or three threads that you really love, and then
Yep.
maybe two that, yeah, I could take it or leave it, but it keeps you interested because there's so much juggling. Like, and that's what comics today, in my opinion, are so single threaded. They're so single threaded.
So single threaded, and you don't even really get like a complete story
Yeah.
in an issue where, even though the comics in the past be heavily serialized and have multiple plot threads and end on cliffhangers, like you still ended up feeling like you had a they still managed to give you like a beginning, middle, and end in an individual issue,
Yeah.
Right. Yep, absolutely. Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, so any G.I. Joe fans that love the 90s, I would definitely check out 137, 138. It's fun stuff.
You can find them.
Yeah, if you can find them, you can find these. Like, there's a lot of stores that don't know, like that don't pay attention to like not first appearances or key issues, and these could be in some bin. It just you have to be patient and look.
Right.
I'm not patient, man. I want to when I want to read something, I want to read it then and there. Like, so I'm excited to get these at least before the Transformers because I read the last issue of the Wildman art. Chris Bautista takes over in 139, and I don't know if that's going to be like a similar like 90s art style or if it, what it's going to go to. And the other thing that's interesting on that is I have never been a big Transformers fan. Like for whatever reason, I've never emotionally attached to these robots. I enjoy them to see them on this big screen, but the cartoon never watched, and every time I try to poke my, try to read some IDW, then I don't get into it.
Yeah, I bought that last series for quite a while, IDW for Transformers, but it was moving way too slowly for me. I
Yeah.
just recently dropped it.
I was bummed out that DCBS didn't they because of shortages didn't give me White from
Oh.
I know it was only limited to 1500 copies, but you think they'd say, "Oh, we'll give one copy to this crazy motherfucker that buys all the books," but no. They got shorted too, I guess, enough that
Wow.
Hey, I'm looking on Comixology. They have all 20 volumes of G.I. Joe Classics
Oh, that's what I'm gonna probably go
on
to.
Comixology, which looks like issue 20 is issues 196 through 205. So,
Wow, that's awesome.
so it looks like it has the whole, and they're all included in Comixology Unlimited also. If you wanted a cheap wave, you could read the first 205 issues of G.I. Joe
Right.
for whatever the cost of Comixology Unlimited is.
That's awesome.
Right now, I just want to read these ones. Like, I want to read
Yeah.
this era. I want to read, like, how did I get there? Like, how I got to the issues that I was there with, and then what happens afterwards, because I still don't know what's going to go on with Scarlet, and I really want to figure it out. And I was happy to see the preview of Snake Eyes yesterday at the theater and find out that the one guy that's in Warrior, God, I love Warrior. That's such an awesome series. The main character that's in Warrior is not Snake Eyes, but he is in the movie. So I was like really happy to see that.
Oh, cool.
'Cause he's a badass. Like I don't he seems like he's like real martial arts guy. It's kind of like Jackie Chan or something, like, a real good kung fu actor, man.
Yeah.
All right. I jumped
Very
right
nice.
in there. I didn't even give you guys a opportunity
There,
to
hey, it was a natural segue as we were talking.
I was gonna say, Mike, why don't you kick us off since you weren't here
Well, I
last
got
time,
more
but
stuff. I got more stuff, so don't.
You read my mind.
I can go next, or Chris. It doesn't make a difference. I got a movie I'm going to talk about.
All right, well, I'm going to talk about comics, so you're going to either break it up or keep it consistent. Doesn't matter to me.
I'll just go through what I watched. It won't take too long.
Okay.
So the other day I was watching Bill Maher, and he had Quentin Tarantino on. And Quentin Tarantino keeps saying that he's gonna stop making movies after he's made 10, and he's made 9 so far. So,
Really?
yeah, he keeps saying that he wants to go out on a, you know, he doesn't want to keep making movies as he get, and they're just crappy movies and stuff like that. So he just wants to quit after 10.
Oh, I think he's got a lot left
That's
in
what Bill
him.
Maher told him.
Yeah. No, because
He's like, you're at your high point now. He goes, that's what I want to, why I want to quit. He's like, I want to
he's
go out
not
on
missed.
top.
Yeah, he's not missed a beat. Like, there's not been a Tarantino movie I haven't l loved. I like them all.
There was two for me, initially. I saw Pulp Fiction in the theater as my first Quentin Tarantino movie, you know, blown away with it. And I got my brother then bought me a Reservoir Dogs, which I had never even heard of, for Christmas that you know, later that year. Watched that, thought it was amazing. Then his next movie was Jackie Brown. Probably went in with some expectations based on Pulp Fiction and Reservoir Dogs in terms of the type of movie and type of plots and stuff, you know, all that stuff. And left not liking Jackie Brown.
What?
Yeah. And then
No, but
hatefully I
you
fell out
watched
with
it
the first one.
recently.
I just, well, that's what I'm going to talk to you about
Yeah.
today is Jackie Brown. Just watched it on Friday night. I'm going to go, I've decided I'm going to go through and watch the 9 movies that he's made so far. Kill Bill being one movie. That's how he counts it as one movie, even though
Yeah,
it's
it's
supposed
one
to
long
be.
movie.
Yeah. I mean, he filmed it all. It just it was so long that
Yeah,
he
he
broke.
just well, it was so long that he just broke it up.
Exactly. So
Does he
I
include Death
decided.
Proof? 'Cause that's like half a
Yes.
movie.
Yes,
Okay.
it includes Death Proof
That's still
as
my favorite. I just love
well.
I freaking love
I
that
liked it
movie.
too, but I have to see that one again too. It's funny that
Oh God, I
Jackie Brown,
adore it.
Hateful Eight, and Death Proof, or Grindhouse in general. I only saw once each. Everything else I've seen at least two or three times, and Pulp Fiction and Reservoir Dogs many, many times.
Inglourious Basterds?
I love Inglourious.
The Western one that just came out too, Hateful Eight.
That one I didn't love. That's my other one that I want to revisit.
Oh, man, that is so cool. They're caught up in the cold, and man, I love that one.
Dude, that's why I have to watch it again, because I think I might have a different appreciation. I don't know, but I sat down. I'm like, you know what? I'm gonna watch all nine. I'm not gonna watch them from from Reservoir Dogs all the way to Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. I'm gonna like mix it up. I'm gonna watch Jackie Brown first because I did not like it coming out of the theater back in 1997.
I kind of felt. I'll be honest with you. When I saw Jackie Brown the first time, I was like, I think I had the expectations of the other two movies.
That's what I'm saying.
It is different.
Yeah.
Like, and he takes a lot of his influence from like 70s Grindhouse. Like, he takes all that stuff and sort of twists it into his own mold.
Well, yeah, it was supposed to. This movie was supposed to be different.
Yeah.
It was a 70s. It's his take on kind of like 70s blaxploitation movies and stuff like that, and I mean, to an extent, obviously it has a lot of Tarantino things, which is, you know, if you're a fan of his, that's what you like. But it just wasn't Pulp Fiction, it wasn't Reservoir Dogs, and I don't, you know, who knows? I guess it just hit me the wrong way. But
well, one difference is that from his other movies is that it's based on a novel.
Yes, that's true.
By Elmore Leonard.
That's a good point. He didn't write. It wasn't based on his original screenplay. It was adapted from a book. That's a great point, Chris.
Not that his screenplays are, you know, he wears his influences on his sleeves. You know, he's got a lot of, he draws from a lot of sources. So it's not like there's still a lot of things that are very familiar on his screenplays.
Oh, for sure. Yeah.
But yeah, I think that does contribute to some of the different feel of it, though.
You know, it's so funny, but I decided to watch that one first, and I'm like, I want it not because I wanted to get one out of the way that I did or I thought I didn't like. It was the opposite. It's like I wanted to revisit a movie that I remembered not liking, but that was 25 years ago. You know. Mm-hmm. So I put it on on Friday night, and it was great. I absolutely loved it. You know, just to give you the basic plot, it's basically this stewardess that has already had some legal trouble in the past that the only airline she could still get a job with is this crappy little airline that goes down to Cabo St. Lucas, Mexico, and so she helps this gun runner played by Samuel L. Jackson in California, and by transferring, he's got money in Mexico, and she transfers it with her, you know, as she makes her flights, and she ends up due to them catching somebody else at the beginning of the movie, the feds. I mean, they know exactly where she was going to be and what and how much money she was going to have, and they, you know, they grab her and stuff, and through a series of manipulations, they want her to, you know, they offer her, you know, to let her go if she can get the information on Samuel L. Jackson. In the meantime, she convinces Samuel L. Jackson that she's going to trick the feds, or actually the ATF guy is played by Michael Keaton. And you know, so because like he actually originally goes to her apartment when she, he pays the money to get her released on bail. Robert Forster is amazing as the bail bondsman who ends up becoming quite smitten with Pam Grier. I should say that Pam Grier plays Jackie Brown. She's the flight attendant, and and Robert Forster's Max Cherry, who's the bail bondsman, and he becomes quite smitten with her, and actually you know, starts to kind of help her out. But
I think this is what introduced me to both of them.
For me too. And I mean, Forster was awesome in this movie. He was incredible.
That's one thing about Tarantino, is he'll, like, if you like movies, he'll lead you back to a lot of other stuff.
He really does. It was really cool. But like, so Samuel Jackson, he pays for her bond because he did the same thing with the previous guy that got arrested. Basically wants them out of the way because he doesn't want anyone ratting him out. So he actually goes to her apartment to get rid of her. I mean, he's kind of talking to see if she said anything, see if he could manage to believe that she didn't say anything. And she hadn't at that point, but he's gonna kill her. He's gonna end up killing her. But she managed to sneak the gun away from Robert Forster's character when he drove her home from prison, and you know, she pulls it out on Samuel Jackson and basically gets him to calm down, and they hatch a plot that, you know, they're gonna basically lead the feds astray with a fake amount of money, and really, you know, deliver the he's got like $500,000 down in Mexico, and get the actual $500,000 away safely, where the feds are going to basically follow one person handing the money off, while that's really only like 10 grand, and she's going to give the rest to a second person that will, you know, be able to escape scot-free. Now, needless to say, nothing is so cut and dry in this situation, and certainly not with Tarantino movies, but it was really cool to see how everything was kind of playing out and stuff. And basically, you know, by the end of it, she's got this whole scam down where she's got everyone convinced, or at least wanting to believe that she's on their side, where really, she ends up working with Robert Forster's character. And, he's the one that grabs the full amount of money, gives it, and ends up getting it to her. But at the same time, without anyone, except for, of course, Samuel L. Jackson, knowing that there was $500,000 coming across the border instead of 50,000, and the feds get the 50,000, they think they got it. They end up, in a shootout with Samuel L. Jackson, and so he ends up not living. So there's no one to say that it was really 500,000 that came across, and now she's got $500,000, and the only one that knows is her and Robert Forster. And they kind of, she even says, you know, he can come with her. And, you know, he said, no, I'm going to stick around. And it was, I know I'm just brushing over the plot, but seriously, if anyone watched this back when it first came out and didn't really think much about it, I highly encourage people to come back and rewatch it with fresh eyes. Now that you've kind of, especially if you are a Quentin Tarantino fan, and it, you know, if you've liked some of his other movies that have come out since, whether it's Once Upon a Time in Hollywood or Inglourious Basterds or Django Unchained or whatever, because, you know, now that he's done all of these other movies, they're not all just, you know, gangster movies. They definitely have a Quentin Tarantino feel to them, and this certainly does, but it's not a Pulp Fiction Part Two by any stretch, which is, I think, what made me not enjoy the film the first time around. I definitely, you know, encourage people to give it another watch. I thought it was just, it was really, really good. I'm really excited that I watched that. The next one I'm going to watch, I kind of filled up my own list, but of course I can change this depending on my mood, but next one I've got up is going to be Inglourious Basterds, which is one of the ones that I absolutely loved, you know, right away out of the theater. I thought it was incredible.
Yeah, Brad Pitt does really good in his movies, because he's in the Hollywood one too.
Yeah. He's got a really good way of
re-putting his actors in the movies.
Yeah, and you can tell that, like, they, you know, by and large, I think actors like working with him because they'll often come back and do another movie. You know?
Yeah.
I mean, there's only a few.
One of the things I'd be curious to know was what you think about his foot fetish after you watch all the movies, because, man, there's a lot of feet.
You know what's funny is that, I mean,
especially Uma Thurman's.
Yeah, but we are 15, 20 minutes into this Jackie Brown movie,
yeah,
and there is the close-up of all close-ups of Bridget Fonda's feet on the
dashboard
coffee table.
Or a coffee table.
Mm-hmm.
Right next to Robert De Niro's drink.
It's
like, at the time when I saw it, I probably didn't think too much of it, but it's like, holy crap. Every single one of his
every
movies.
Single's movies has the feet. Yeah, women's feet. It's like crazy.
Yep.
Wait till you get back to Death Proof, man. You get a lot of feet.
Okay, I don't remember. That's good to know. I don't remember it in Death Proof at all.
Stuntman
Mike. Most of the other
movies.
Oh,
my God.
I don't think there's any in Reservoir Dogs. I don't think there's, like, any women in Reservoir Dogs.
Oh, yeah, I don't remember. But isn't that his first one?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so I don't know. And then I don't remember feet in the Western, The Hateful Eight.
No. Oh, yeah.
I remember there's a woman in it, but it is like cold weather. So it's
Yeah,
like,
it's like Jennifer Jason Leigh, isn't
yeah.
it?
Yeah. They're all garmed up pretty much because it's
Oh,
freezing.
Yeah, they're bundled. They're bundled, yeah. And he didn't have the opportunity.
But there you got Kurt Russell in the movie again, and I love that stuff.
Yeah, he likes Kurt Russell too. Kurt Russell was in Once Upon a Time as well.
Yeah, I wish Uma Thurman would come back. It seems like she's hasn't been much anymore.
He keeps floating all these ideas. He's like, you know, Bill Maher asked him about Reservoir Dogs if you'd make it differently or something like that. Because his point was, Bill Maher's point was, well, you can't quit now. You're still doing a great job. Like, you wouldn't have made this Reservoir Dogs the same way today as you did, you know, 30 years ago. And he's like, no, you know, it's funny. I actually have an idea of, you know, what I would do if I remade it. He's like, I'm not remaking the movie. But if I did, I have an idea. And then I just read recently that if he made a Kill Bill 3, and he's not, but if he did, Maya Hawke would be the daughter of the bride.
Yeah, nice.
Thurman's character, yeah. So it sounds like he constantly has ideas that he's tossing out from based on old movies, but
Include From Dusk Till Dawn in his movie list?
No,
that's co-done with
it.
Robert Rodriguez. Yeah.
Yeah, I think he only wrote it. I think Rodriguez directed it.
And he's another one that, I like to follow his movies is Rodriguez, but he's a little more extreme and ridiculous than Tarantino. Like, Tarantino's plots are more intricate. Rodriguez turns a lot of his films into like a B-film glory film, like, you know, like Desperado. There's some ridiculous scenes in there, El Mariachi, and then you got Machete, and, you know, all the stuff he does, and From Dusk Till Dawn, and yeah, I dig his stuff as well. He was supposed to do at one point
a
Red Sonja.
Lava Girl. Have you ever seen that?
That was the kids one, right?
Yeah, it is. But
he does a lot of the stuff with actors again, and he has the Antonio Banderas thing again.
Yeah, he does. He's in there.
He
kind of did that for his kids, if I remember correctly.
Yeah. So yeah, I like those two. I like when they collaborate.
My kids love that movie.
The Grindhouse film as a whole, which was his film and Robert Rodriguez, was a masterpiece to see at the theater, because
anybody
who's been to a drive-in gets the drive-in experience in the theater, and it's awesome.
Yeah,
It is
have
so
all the
awesome.
ads in between and
And
stuff,
the film burning
the
up, like that happened in the drive-in.
Oh, I forgot about that.
Yeah,
That's
the
right.
film burns up, and then it like cuts. It's like spliced back together, and he does all
Yep.
that shit in there.
I wonder, I see it broken up all over the place. I wonder, is there a way that I can watch Grindhouse, or do I have to just
I
watch?
don't ever see it besides the DVD where it's together anymore.
Yeah,
They're
I wonder why that
they
is.
treat them as, and they show like Tarantino's way more than they do that Planet
Terror.
Terror, yeah.
I might have to just buy the Blu-ray. I see it here for it's $30, but
Yeah, that's what Machete came out of. It was a preview
yeah, it was a preview.
in between the two movies.
Yeah,
And
that was fantastic.
I do love Machete.
Yeah, I'm gonna have to
Danny
I'm gonna have to
Trejo,
go
huge fan.
buy this. Oh yeah, he's cool, isn't he?
Yeah, I have the many faces of Danny Trejo, just like I do the Stormtrooper, where it doesn't change. Yeah.
He's a cool guy. He's got quite an interesting I don't know if he's ever had a book written about him or written a book, but he definitely needs to write some sort of biography
Yeah. Well,
of
he
himself.
was in prison at one time too.
Yeah, he was.
Yeah.
So it's just interesting how, I mean, this is a guy that really turned his whole life around.
Yeah, and then he has like now he went into the restaurant business. He's got taco shops and donut shops and all kinds
Yeah,
of stuff.
that's pretty cool. I didn't know that. That's cool.
Yeah. And he's like 70 something and he still looks fantastic.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that was my dive back into Tarantino. I wanted to go right to one of the movies that I one of the two movies that I didn't appreciate at the time, and I'm telling you, I appreciated that one. I hope that the same thing happens with Hateful Eight for me when I get to that one as well.
Cool beans.
Yep.
Cool. Well, I've been continuing to read some Silver Age Marvel, which I got curious this morning. I tried to figure out when I started with Fantastic Four number one, and it looks like it was at least 7 years ago. And I've made it, and I'm in 1966, I think. So I've made it through like about 4 years in actual, well, 4 years of comics and like 7 years. So
Could be
I
worse.
was, yeah, I was curious to see what my progress was in projecting forward. But it, obviously, it doesn't matter really, but.
How old will you be when you get to 1980?
Yeah, that's what I have to would have to do some math, but not my strong suit there. But yeah, I have one thing I've noticed though is interesting is, stuff almost everything continues to be written by Stan Lee, but and he had been writing a while prior to Fantastic Four number one. But I really feel like at this point, you can really feel like they're in the groove, him and Ditko and Kirby and the other collaborators. There's just everything's a multi-part storyline, just really epic sagas. I'm not talking about today because it's just really been talked about a lot, but this is all like right around this issue I'm going to talk about is right around the same time as Amazing Spider-Man number 33, which I just read, which I might have read before, maybe like 20 years ago or something like that. But that is just,
I love that.
it's just a fantastic comic. I
Yep.
mean, there was, I don't know about DC, but there was definitely nothing like the first half of that comic prior to that in Marvel Comics. And it's just a fantastic gauntlet that Spider-Man goes through, and Ditko really makes you feel what he goes through.
I love that issue, Chris, and that's one that I've kind of always been in the background that I've wanted to actually own, but I just still don't have it. But
yeah, it'd be a tough one. I mean, it's often listed on lists as one of the best comic stories of all time and stuff.
It's fantastic, but that I think that with that cover, knowing how that story goes, it's just like I just want to have that issue. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's also around the time with that issue, might have been the first issue, but it's definitely around this time also where you see a change in the credits too, where Ditko got the credits changed to list him as the plotter on this and on Doctor Strange, and Stan Lee is just listed as scripter. So I mean, I knew that was coming at some point because maybe from reading like Untold History of Marvel Comics or something, but just interesting to see that occur. But what I am going to talk about is Strange Tales issue 142. This is we've got Nick Fury and Doctor Strange, speaking of. Nick Fury, Doctor Strange has been in Strange Tales for a while, appropriately enough. Nick Fury replaced Human Torch. I found it to be a big improvement personally. The Human Torch stories, but these Nick Fury Shield stories are great. And I, having read like later Kirby work on the Fourth World and stuff, I definitely feel a lot of Kirby in these issues. Has that same kind of like strange humor and wild ideas and stuff.
It's funny that you say that, because I got a lot of that from some of the Tales of Suspense and some of the early Captain America stuff that I've been reading, because Nick Fury and S.H.I.E.L.D. are practically in every single, I mean, basically Cap is an agent of S.H.I.E.L.D. In these stories. That's all that he does, is he's going on missions, for Nick Fury. So yeah, I totally agree with you. It's very reminiscent of what he does later on with Fourth World.
Yeah. Yeah. It gives you kind of insight. It's not just, it's true that these are really collaborative and, Stan wasn't delivering, real detailed, scripts with everything already, decided and stuff like that, that the pencilers, really were heavily involved in, and stuff. So, this is called Who Strikes at S.H.I.E.L.D. And it's funny, it starts out with a little vignette, like a couple pages where this machine is going out of control, and there's a little caption at the bottom of the page. It says, "To give you an example of our generosity, this robot isn't even important to our yarn. We just tossed him in as an added extra for you," which I had to laugh at that, just as an example of Stan's ability to put a spin on things. there's this kind of robot that's out of the control. They get him under control by the end of the second page. And then, but what this is the storyline that's going on right now is with Mentallo. I think it was the prior issue where I believe, or the issue before that, which is Mentallo's Mentallo is a better way to say that.
It's me.
was his first appearance. He was a former S.H.I.E.L.D. agent with mental abilities. Part of the
you know, like I said, there's a lot, I feel a lot of Kirby in it, but well, one of the things that I do really enjoy, it's in the, like in the Howling Commandos too, is the dialogue of Nick Fury, is one of the things that makes these really enjoyable to read. just his attitude and his gruff mannerisms and stuff. But they have this machine called the Brainwave Stimulator. And there's three, a middle-aged man, a middle-aged woman, and an older man connected to this machine that are searching for Mentallo. And when they find him mentally, it'll display where he's at on this screen and to show him where he, and so when they locate him, he's they find him, he's got scuba gear on, he seems to be swimming underwater, and Fury says, maybe he thinks we live in a fishbowl. Let's see what happens. This is almost as good as the Flintstones. So what's going on actually is that the is Mentallo is seeking out the fixer. Mentallo is basically auditioning himself by getting past all of the fixer's traps. You know, and the fixer says only a mind reader could have found my hiding place, and that's exactly what Mentallo is. So S.H.I.E.L.D. is looking in all on all of this, so you know, and they know, they've heard of the fixer and that he's supposed to be up in Tony Stark's class in terms of making weapons and stuff. So then we get this sequence. This is, again, feels real Kirby to me, where Fury goes in this other room. There's a bunch of like bare-chested men fighting, and the guy in the middle has these things that he calls portable distorters, and he's just fending off these other guys that are trying to attack him with these big bats and stuff like that. They stop when Fury comes in. The guy that's fending off the others says, he explains that they're gadgets that broadcast inaudible frequencies and upsets their opponent's nervous systems and this spoils their timing. Fury says, "All right, when I need a speech, I'll ask for one. Pass them out to your squad and stand by, that's all." Then he wonders to himself, why is he barking at this guy? And he thinks, you know, maybe it's because I know none of this stuff is going to make any difference against Mentallo. So they get Fury suited up with this crazy looking Kirby-esque, well, not Kirby-esque, it's actually Kirby. Kirby the real deal looking communications device. Meanwhile, Fixer and Tello are on this machine of the Fixers that they're going to try to attack S.H.I.E.L.D. from underground. So that it's got this, they have this big machine that they're burrowing through the ground. But they get to a point where there's an underground wall, Mentallo says he probes it and says that not even the rockets that they have are going to be able to penetrate this wall, and Fixer says, "Let me handle it. You know, I'm never at a loss for a proper weapon," and he's got these things called he modifies these turbo blowers that he's got, and they like come off of this harness that he's wearing, and he changed them into what he calls Jericho tubes, and like he names them after Joshua in the Bible, who blew down the walls of Jericho.
and he bellows into these tubes, and it creates this sonic pitch that collapses the wall, and they get inside of the headquarters. We continue to follow the two of them as they try to, they work their way through Shield's defenses, and they get into this other room where they're basically, it's like that traditional trap where the walls and the ceiling are closing in. And apparently these are made out of some kind of different material, a hard fiber instead of metal. And I guess his Jericho tubes aren't going to work on that. Mentallo uses his mental ability to find a weak spot in the wall and directs Fixer to put what he calls a radar crab on that area, and then it basically like burrows its way through. As soon as they walk through the hole that they've created, there's a whole panel of stun guns ready to fire at them, and the Fixer pulls up a vibro missile deflector, Mantallo fires a pistol grenade to blow them up from behind the shield. So finally, Fury and his group that are all suited up encounter these two. The two villains use anti-grav propellants to shoot past them. The Fury and Shield, they weren't expecting. And they release these neutrino shells, which release element Z that can seep through any material. So even though Fury and Shield, they have these suits on with helmets, it goes through their suits, and they all become paralyzed and pass out. They take off Fury's glass helmet and replace it with this. It almost kind of looks like the Vision before the Vision. It only covers the front of his face, but it's white with just a couple slits for eyes and like this sort of blue framing around the face area that kind of swoops into a mouth looking area, it alters Fury's brain and allows the villains to control him. They say, "Rise, slave, prepare to serve the new masters of S.H.I.E.L.D." And so that's how that ends for this installment. Really cool, really fun story. Lots of just like crazy pseudoscience stuff in there. And then the Doctor Strange story, which is, of course, edited and written by Stan Lee, plotted and drawn by Steve Ditko, with letters by Artie Simic. This continues a long-going story at this point of Doctor Strange. It's kind of like follows up from this long story of Strange versus Dormammu and Baron Mordo. He's coming back to Greenwich Village and is not aware that there was a bomb planted in there. But he manages to sense it get it out in time. As he's kind of in the air, the three individuals who planted the bomb use spells on him to trap him. And then when Doctor Strange wakes up, he has a mask on his face and like these kind of gauntlets over his hands that this mask is kind of different. It looks like sort of, how do you remember Barbecue from the G.I. Joes?
Oh, sure, yeah.
But it kind of looks like his mask without a top, so you can still see his hair. Mm. But it's got like, it's almost skeletal, but the mouth is more like, looks like a respirator. They've taken his cloak and his amulet. The individuals who've done this to him, you know, they talk about how they've accomplished their goal, but they're wondering why they haven't been able to contact Baron Mordo, which we know Baron Mordo, he was involved in the whole Dormammu thing, and he was just a real, you know, thought real highly of himself, but totally a lackey to Dormammu and displeased Dormammu a number of times, including when he attacked Doctor Strange from behind when Strange and Dormammu were dueling, and you know, Dormammu wanted to win outright and saw that as a affront to Mordu's ability, like, you know, confidence in Dormammu's ability to win and stuff. So this shadowy figure in a hat, he says, we'll find out sooner or later, but he's been chosen as deputy leader of the area by Mordo. So he is going to command, and he's going to study Strange's amulet. A guy he addresses as a demon, as he tells him to probe Strange's mind, and that they can contact each other mentally if they need to. This demon individual, I mean, he looks like a regular human with just like a pointy beard, but he tries to probe Strange's mind, and Strange can sense what's being attempted and tries to fight it off. Strange proves to be the better of him. Manages to overcome him and take control of him and command him to let him out of this force field kind of imprisonment that he's in. So Strange still has the mask that prevents him from using his senses, and also, you know, is the things over his hands, but he can move. We then see the individual that was shadowed before has removed their hat and their jacket and whatnot. And we see that it is a woman. Not sure if she's made a prior appearance or not, but I'll have to look that up. She looks to see what the progress is and sees that Strange has forced his captor to break the spell. She breaks that connection that Strange has to the demon that so he can no longer control him, but you know, he's already at least gotten out of the force field, and so what he ends up doing is using his astral form so this leads to a really kind of interesting sequence where his spirit self is leading his physical body around. So he's using the senses of his physical body, kind of moving slowly,
moving his physical body slowly, and then at times he'll pause his physical body somewhere like in the shadows and go ahead in his spirit form. And there's kind of this neat sequence where he has a fight with a henchman in this status. So like he waits till the guy's close and then merges quickly with his body and just throws a blind punch and manages to hit the guy. And like switches back and forth between his spiritual form being or not being a part of his body to kind of time these blind hits on this guy, which is kind of a really kind of neat concept and stuff. And then, so he runs up the stairs and almost runs into another henchman. He doesn't have time to react and the guy tackles him. But in this case, he actually, he rises out of his body and his spiritual self and allows in such a way that the henchman can see him, and it freaks him out enough that he can throw a punch and knock this guy out. So, it ends excitingly as well when Strange makes it to the, rooftop and, he spies things out with his spiritual form and he decides that, he's going to, make a jump to the next rooftop. And, so he merges back with his physical form, makes the jump and he feels his foot, connect with something. And you see just the head of a spiritual form kind of peeking out to see what's happening. He's just miscalculated, but he manages to, grab the ledge and hold on and pull himself onto the next, onto the rooftop. But it ends with him thinking, you know, even though he's accomplished that, sooner or later they're going to find him, and he's still, you know, he still doesn't have his cloak, which allows him to levitate. He still doesn't have his amulet, and he still, you know, has that mask and things on his hands. So, but he resolves to fight to the death. And that's how the issue ends. So I thought that was a really neat concept, you know, just that sequence, a real, you know, the astral form's not new to this issue, but I thought it was a really neat challenge to put him to have to, you know, deal with his, use his spirit, his astral form to, guide his physical body. I thought that was a neat. Altogether, a good issue. Both stories were all enjoyable, as they have been for a little while now in this title.
You know what I get a kick out of is it's happened. I can't even tell. Not every issue, but almost every issue that Fury appears in the Captain America ones that I'm reading.
Mm-hmm.
Always come like. Cap will say something or like just whine about something,
mm-hmm.
Sharon Carter or whatever. And almost every issue Nick Fury tells Cap to stop because Nick forgot to bring his crying towel with him.
Yeah, he's like got that attitude, like toughen up, Buttercup.
Yeah,
like
just crying towel really fell out of the.
He's so gruff.
Lexicon sometime after the '60s, because I've never said this anybody a crying towel, but Nick Fury says it an awful lot.
Yeah, it's. I mean, it would be a toxic attitude in real life, but he's pretty hilarious though.
It's awesome.
Yeah, I thought she was someone more significant, but I might have mixed her up with somebody else. But on the database, it just has them as Baron Mordo's minions. Demonicus, Cassilius, and the Witch. So that's who they were. for the curious.
Very cool.
All right. Well, my next one is in the X-Men vein, so it's been a lot of Marvel this week. But it's Uncanny X-Men 245. Now, this issue I've been trying to track down. Because...
245, Mike?
Yeah.
Did you say 245?
Yeah, it's Rob Liefeld.
Why didn't you cover 244?
Because this is Rob Liefeld.
Yeah, but 244 is First Jubilee.
Because 245 is Rob's first Uncanny X-Men gig.
Yeah, but that, I think First Jubilee should trump First Rob Liefeld gig.
I don't know.
Just kidding.
You could opinions can vary. Although I really wanted to read this. Claremont kind of let me down in throwing Rob Liefeld a done-in-one comedy, and I don't know if. I'm not the biggest X-Men fan until recently. Like, I've been reading a lot of X-Men lately, but they were always the team that I didn't collect. So I would always get Defenders and Avengers, and I'd stay away from the mutant world. And this one was interesting. There's an alien race. I don't even think they name them, but they look like Dominators if you're a Invasion fan from although the Dominators I think have been prior to Invasion, but they look like Dominators, and they decide to attack Earth, and they have something called the Gene Bomb, which they never really explain, but it looks like Jean Grey in a tube and they never get to launch it, but it's interesting too, because Rob, he tends to draw Wolverine with no eyes, and I find it fascinating. It could be the colorist jacking up the, so it might not just be Rob. It might be who does the colors on this thing. Colors is Glynis Oliver. So Rob Liefeld's drawing it. Dan Green is inking it. Tom DeFalco's the editor, and Bob Harris is the X-Men editor. And Bob Harris is kind of the guy that gave Rob the opportunity to change New Mutants, which led to X-Force, which led to Rob's monetary popularity, and led him to be one of the Image creators, in my opinion. So he had an opportunity with an editor. It was Bob Harris. But in this one, it's like a done-in-one comedy, and you'll have to tell me if Claremont tried to do this often. But there's an alien attack on Earth, and some of these aliens, like if you zoom in, it gives the opportunity for Rob to draw Yoda, Alien, E.T., Jabba, Boba Fett, Ming the Merciless. I mean, you could see them all in the background. Wow. Chewbacca, Darth Vader. There's a lot of characters that are rallying on this invasion. So you'd think they would actually succeed. It shows the X-Men in Australia. Storm is naked in the sky, taking a shower. Dazzler is using laser eyes to train. Rogue is looking for one of her gloves or her boots. And Longshot shows up and hands her boot. Here it is, because he's got the luck power to find stuff. Colossus is painting. I don't remember Colossus ever painting.
Oh yeah, he's a painter.
That's like his hobby. Yeah. Uh-huh.
Havoc is on monitor duty, and he's just watching all this, and can't find Wolverine because Wolverine is able to escape the monitor duty, and there seems like there's a lot of tension between Wolverine and Havoc. But they see this invasion. Well, they go to Australia, and I guess at this time Peter can't transform from Colossus back to human form. Like he can't like armor up. He stays in armor.
He stays in armor. Is it? I know at one point he had been terribly injured, and if he would change back, they didn't know what was going to happen to him. But I don't know if this is that, or I'm thinking of something much earlier on.
Yeah, he might have been injured. I don't know, but it doesn't explain it here. It just, I found it odd that Dazzler, he wants to look human to go to a bar with Wolverine, so Dazzler's painting his face, so he, you know,
Oh.
with makeup and stuff, and gets him to look human, and he's going to the bar with Havoc, Longshot, and Colossus. They all go. They take the gateway, or gateway opens a t to the outback, I guess a bar, and then they head over to the bar. And meanwhile, the aliens are getting ready to attack. It seems like some of the aliens show up at the bar, and then Longshot's using his ability, and the way Rob draws Longshot's hair is nuts, but he draws him like a pretty boy, and using his pheromones and heart power, I guess. He's got all the women around him. And the way he draws some of these women are crazy, because there's one of them that must be about 10 feet tall. But they're all swarming and wanting to dance with him while the other guys are drinking. And yeah, I don't know what's going on with Wolverine's eyes, but they're all eyebrows. And it's so weird, and I don't know if it's the colorist or what, but it's very entertaining. And then these aliens show up at the bar, and they start throwing down with Colossus, and they look more like those muscle aliens in DC. I forget what they're called in Invasion. They were in
Starts with a
Legion a
B,
lot.
doesn't it?
Yeah, they were the ones that look huge.
Yeah.
That's what these aliens look like. And they go to the bar and they start throwing down with the X-Men, and then Wolverine ends up playing cards with one of the aliens, and I guess that seems to stop the alien invasion. And then it's got a weird thing in there with the Daily Planet. Like, it's the Daily Planet without being the Daily Planet. It shows like part of the globe, and it says Ailey, and then you could barely see the P. And you see some guys like, "Hey, Chief," you know, like Jimmy Olsen, and he's like,
Yeah.
"We gotta do this story about these aliens from outer space." And he's go, "No, we gotta cover the inauguration of the President of the United States." So Jimmy Olsen goes pounding. The aliens p are pouting because they end up getting sent away because of this card game that Wolverine beats one of the aliens at cards. And they have to retreat. So yeah, it's a weird comedy. And at the very end, Storm comes by and says, "You gentlemen had a good old time?" And Wolverine just lays this huge smooch on her, man. Like, he bends her over his knee and just plants one on her and says, "It was the best." And he says, "Nice." And she says, "You are crazy." He says, "Works for me, darling." But yeah, it's such a weird, and then it ends on like a really curious Hellfire thing, which I'm more interested in what happens afterwards, because I'm a Hellfire. There's I like the Hellfire Sebastian Shaw stuff quite a bit.
Yeah, me too.
So anytime they appear, I'm very interested in what's going on.
He would sometimes do like these little like one story thing. The one other example I can think of is like back in, I think it's issue 153, and the whole idea is that they're trying to get Ilana to go to sleep, and Kitty tells a like just a fairy tale bedtime story to her, and that's the entire issue, and that's where you get the first appearance of those little BAMPs, the little Nightcrawlers.
Yeah, the light crawlers.
Yeah. 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 So you know, that's how Nightcrawler appears in there, and it's like a pirate type story with fantasy and stuff like that, and so that was just a totally one and done, just fairy tale story that they're telling. They're telling Alana, you know, try to get her to go to sleep.
Yeah. So Chris Claremont was trying to tell some jokes in this one. I guess it was a very weird one shot. I could tell at this point that Rob didn't have power because Claremont obviously said, "You're doing this," and he had to stick to his layouts because he was more standard layouts than what Rob is used to doing. And I was hoping for more bang that Rob brings in his layouts, but it was more traditional at this point. And he was already doing bang out layouts because before he came here, he had already done Hawk and Dove at DC. So, yeah. But I'm making my way to have a full run of this. I'm getting pretty close. At least Uncanny X-Men, when it officially changed. I still have quite a bit of X-Men to do. But a lot of the X-Men I'm missing are the reprints. That's all I got.
I actually had that issue when I was a kid. I didn't buy it off the newsstand or something. It was a back issue I managed to get my hands on somehow. And, you know, back then, both because of lack of internet and lack of funds, the amount of comics I had was limited. So I've read that issue like at least 10 times. It all was just coming back to me as you were talking about it.
This was the first one that the first time I've read this issue. Like I had a bunch of Uncanny X-Men, and then I was looking at it and I'm like, wow, I'm missing the Rob Liefeld issue for some reason. So being the Rob fan that I am, I had to go purchase it. And it was entertaining. It just wasn't what I was hoping for. I could see like his influence on some of this, but a lot of the panels, like where the aliens are drawn and stuff, there's so much going on that you can't tell it's Rob. Like, I don't know if it's the inker filling in for him or what, but the close-ups, you can definitely tell it's Rob, but some of the background stuff you can't, so I don't know if that's him or if that's the inker filling in. It's hard to tell.
Yeah, who was the anchor on that?
Somebody green. But like where Darth Vader's drawn and Chewbacca, they're so tiny that you can't tell if it's Rob or not. Definitely can tell when he's drawing the aliens in the bar scene that's him. And he draws a really good Storm. And a good Chief and Jimmy Olsen, too. I like it. The aliens look really cool, especially the Dominators. The Cuds, that was what I was thinking of. The muscle-bound aliens in DC. It's spelled K-N-U-N-D-S, I think. But that's what some of the aliens look like in this particular issue. And I didn't know that Havoc and Wolverine didn't like each other. At least they appear to not.
Yeah, I think that was at least they had some tension, at least during that time period when they were both on the team. You know, I don't know if like before and after, I don't know if it's so much of a thing, but I think they had like a little bit of a tension.
I know he's always had it with his brother. He's always had it with Scott. I didn't know he had it with Alex. And I find it so intriguing, like sexually, what's going on in the current stuff in X-Men, because Scott, it looks like there's like Jean is with Wolverine and Scott at the same time. Like, that seems so weird to me. And if there's one X-Men book where it shows the layout on the moon of their bedrooms, and it's like Jean is right in the middle between Wolverine and Scott, and you're like, what the hell is happening?
Yeah, that was pretty early on, like X-Men issue 1 or 2 or something like that, because I've seen that. And at the time, I think people were speculating based off of that, because there was no other confirmation or indication of anything like that prior to that layout being shown.
Well, in the Wolverine comic and other ones, he's been macking on Jean. I haven't gotten far enough in the X-Men to see if it's Scott as well, but I know that there's a relationship definitely between Wolverine and Jean and the current stuff.
Yeah.
All right, Rob, I think you're up. If you're there.
Is he muted, or did he say something?
If he's not, then you can go next. Bless you. Good Lord. It's like COVID over here.
Okay, I'll do my other one. We can go out of order. You just pull it up here. So for my other one, I read this for the show because I thought I'd go back to one of my old standards and read a Betty and Veronica. This is issue 209. It looks like it's from 1973.
How are you reading this?
Hoopla. Just the way I've read the other ones. Text message from Rob. His internet just went down. He's going to try restarting.
It's weird because I didn't hear a drop on... You know how Skype you usually hear cha-ching?
Yeah. Me neither. See, the cover, it doesn't... Cover is just its own gag. Doesn't have a connection to anything in any of the stories. But it's too... It's actually split in half. On one side, it's what's the like female Jughead? Do you know her name?
No, but I know who you're talking about.
Yeah, she like looks like Jughead, but
yeah, she's got the funky teeth too, doesn't she?
Yeah, because she's not in any of the stories for her to say her name, but her and Betty are sitting on the bed in Veronica's room. Veronica's showing him her outfit. Daddy brought me these darling hot pants. They're like real short shorts. And then the next panel, she's got this like winter coat on that covers her entire body. And she says, he also bought me this maxi coat to go with him. Betty's saying, I'm surprised in the first one. And she's saying, I'm not surprised in the second. So the first story is called Snow Go, and Betty and Veronica are kind of playing in the snow. Betty, being Betty, she just straight up drops on her back into the snowbank and is like rubbing the snow in her hair, and she jumps flying into the air and lands in a snowbank. And I mean, Veronica's just standing around. She's not really doing much, talking about how Betty's just a total nut, you know, and that's Betty and Veronica there for you. This real handsome guy comes walking up, and he's like, can I help? It seemed like your friend has an accident. And, he introduces himself as Stan Lowry, and Veronica introduces herself, and she's got like hearts floating around her head. And Betty says, "You know, I just can't resist fresh snow." He says, and Stan says, "Oh, I agree. It's fun to romp in the drifts." And Betty says, "Oh, well, by my guess, by all means." He's like, "So yeah, it's not a bad idea." And Veronica says, Betty, you poor thing, you're soaking wet. You'll catch your death of cold." And she just starts pushing her out of the way and like shoos her away. You better go home and change your clothes because she wants to be alone with Stan. So Betty runs into Archie and says, "What? You're all wet." She's like, "Yeah, I'm going to go home and change." And Veronica's with this guy who wandered by named Stan Lowry. And Archie knows who he is. He says, "Oh, yeah, he's a great guy. He's kind of a little weird, but he's a good guy." He's like, "Well, I guess I was going to go see Veronica, but I guess I won't because three's a crowd and all that, especially Stan is one of them." And he says, "Actually, why don't you just go change your clothes and I'll wait for you." So there's in one panel, it just shows her streak into the house and streak out of the house in different clothes. Past her mom, because she's going to get to hang out with Archie. And then they actually run into Stan and Veronica. Well, long story short, what turns out that what's different about Stan is he's a real health nut and he's real into exercising and fitness and stuff like that. So while Archie and Betty are going to go get ice cream and then lay around and listen to records, Veronica has to go like cross country skiing with Stan. So the next story is called The Seed of the Trouble. And it starts with Veronica screaming and her father and Betty go running up the stairs and they're like, "What's wrong? What's wrong?" And she screamed because she put on these pants and they're too tight. So she says, "I'm fat." So she pulls them off and tells Betty to try them on. And she's like, "Oh, they're snug on me too." And Veronica's like, "Oh, we let ourselves go. We got to do something about it. We've got to diet and exercise, fight the fat, the blubber."
That's funny.
Yeah, this is like definitely.
"Wait, no, I'll try on your pants." Yeah. "Oh, they're tight on me."
So they both like go on this horrible diet. I mean, talking about things that like would not hold up today. Betty doesn't eat dinner. She only has water for breakfast and then goes out for a run. She gets over to Veronica's house. She's been doing knee bends for half an hour and then they go out for another run together and they're wearing like heavy clothes to sweat. And then they go swimming and then they get like this really intense massage by this like Swedish, one of those like big Swedish looking women. And then they go into like a sauna to sweat it off. And then a week later they're like, "Well, let's see if we've lost any weight or not. And we'll try to put these pants on again." And as Veronica's about to put the pants on, her maid comes in and says, "Oh, don't wear those. Those were washed by mistake. They should have been dry cleaned. They're probably shrunk." Then the last panel is Betty and Veronica at school talking about going to get a triple banana split after school, and their clothes are just like they've lost so much weight that their regular clothes are just like super baggy and stuff on them, and two guys are commenting on how fashion seemed to be fuller. Then the next story is called Dilton Does It Again, and it's...
Does it say who the writer was on that story?
No, it never has any credits for any of these, fortunately. I don't know if people have found out and listed it online somewhere or something, maybe, but... So this one, to summarize real quick, it starts out... You know, it's another situation where Archie's into Veronica, so Betty's jealous, and so she gets Dilton, the like real nerdy guy. to make her a love potion. Dilton pretends to make one. It's just sugar and water. Jughead's with Dilton. He says, "That's a love potion? What does she love? Cavities?" So they go to the soda shop, and Dilton says, "Distract him. I'll slip it in his milkshake." And he doesn't even do that. Like, he just pretends to. And this gives Betty all kinds of confidence because she thinks that he's taken the love potion, but he hasn't actually. And that's kind of like the moral of the story, if you will, that like what Dilton did worked because it gave Betty the confidence to just go up and get Archie, basically, even though the love potion wasn't real. And then the last story is called Anonymously Yours. And this one's a pretty good one. It starts off with Veronica approaching Betty and Archie and saying, I love this. "Oh, you're so lucky being poor and common instead of rich and famous. You don't have to worry about threatening letters." Talk about a backhanded compliment. This is all about how Veronica just keeps getting these anonymous notes. Like, the one that she's already got says, "Why should you be gorgeous and lovable and charming while the rest of us are so ordinary? Beware." So then, like, a kid runs up saying he's got a letter for Veronica Lodge. And it says something about leaving their boyfriend alone. And she says, "Oh, I think it's about the fiance. I think it's from the fiance of an obscure star who's been driven wild by my beauty." And a paper airplane comes flying over the fence, and talks about whoever wrote it is out of their minds with uncontrolled passion over her. Signed by T. Jones and E. Humperdinck. And there's a weird exchange where Archie says, "Never heard of him." Betty says, "So did I." "So did you what?" "So did I, never heard of them." I don't know why that's there, but they go for a little bit of a walk, and they see a piece of paper on a rock, and Veronica says, "Look, it's another anonymous note." And "Listen, it's from some poor mother. I get a you, for have better figure than my Sophia. It's a not right." And a rock gets thrown over a hedge. It's got another one, and it's like, talks about how Veronica's beauty's disrupting the work on Capitol Hill, and the CIA is declaring her off limits. And she says, at this point she walks away and says, why me? Oh, nobody knows the troubles I've seen. And she leaves. And so at this point, Jughead comes up. He says, "Hey, the words that Ronnie's being besieged with all sorts of anonymous notes." Said, that's awful. Poor kid, how do you go about stopping that sort of thing? And we see that they're standing in front of her house, and Archie says, "Take her typewriter away," and you can see her shadow in the upstairs window seated at a desk clacking away. And so she's the one that's been writing all these notes. And that's the end of issue 209. Entertaining as usual, in a out of time sort of way.
Can you hear me?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Oh, my internet just totally turned off in the middle of one of your sentences, Mike.
Ah.
That was weird.
Disconnected totally.
Well, I thought so because you were up next, and we couldn't get a hold of you, so Chris just went and you missed his coverage of Betty and Veronica 209.
Betty and Veronica?
Yeah. They were trying to get into each other's pants, which was a really good issue.
Wow. Surprising for the time. Is that why you selected it, Chris?
No, it was just a pleasant surprise.
Random luck.
Thank you for picking up my slack.
No problem. We can go out of order sometimes. Nobody will complain, I assume.
Well, I don't know about that, but
what do you got for us, Rob?
Oh, so it is. So you're all done.
Yep.
So I came
you're
back just,
this
just
up.
In the nick
you
of
came
time.
Right when he yeah, covered the last timing. Story. Yeah.
That's
I was just about
funny.
Thought what I was gonna say.
All right. So, I'm trying now. I gotta find it again because I read it on the app. Of course, I couldn't get on this. Okay. So I read The Flash. Number one.
The Golden Age?
Nope. From 1987.
Ah, Wally.
Oh, here's another issue I've read multiple times.
I can't seem to find it now, but I did read it, I promise. What the heck is it?
What do you mean to find it?
I can help you remember what happens.
I can't find this freaking I sorted everything in alphabetic order and it's not showing up.
You use a
those
search
damn
or something?
Digital comics. You need to go to your box and pull it out.
You ain't kidding, mister.
Let's get the paper, man.
I got it. Here, man. Oh, I committed the sin of looking up Flash. It's The Flash. Under T.
That's stupid. I hate Marvel's app does that, too. That's not...
Yeah.
That's dumb.
So, you know, I wanted to say, I don't think I've ever read, I haven't read this first issue by Baron, and how do you pronounce his last name? Geis?
I think so.
It's Jackson, G-U-I-C-E.
Butch
Geis or Geese.
No, not Butch, it's Jackson.
Oh, Jackson Geis. No, I don't think, is I don't know, is it?
Yeah.
It is the same person?
I think so.
Okay.
Maybe he goes by Butch now.
Yeah.
Maybe it's Jackson Butch Geis.
it could be.
Yeah, Butch is his nickname.
Oh. Okay.
Yeah, he's great. I love his art.
So it's Geis, yeah.
He's still doing stuff.
He is, yeah.
He's doing the Futurists the Allegiance, from right? the Allegiance, yeah. The Futurists.
Yeah. I can only imagine, 1987, I was full in, and, you know, after Crisis, and I think the spinoff of Legends and stuff, but, if you were an old-school DC person, I gotta kind of wonder what you would have thought, you know, with Barry dying and everything else, because it had to be quite a change for those, you know, old-school fans.
Yeah, because you think that Barry's really dead.
Well, and he was for a good 20 years, right?
Yeah, he was dead for a long time.
So, you know, this whole story he's narrating, it's an internal dialogue with the thinking bubble panels, the square panels. It's just him, you know, basically narrating the whole story and. Like right away, you can tell there's, you know, there's going to be differences. And, you know, you've got, you know, Wally checking into a convenience store and he buys a lottery, $5 in lottery tickets and 6 baby roots. And he talks, you know, he's talking right away about how he always has to feed the beast. And, you know, he's basically just from a mad dash. Across the street costs some six baby roots. So you already know this is going to be a different type of speedster.
Mm-hmm.
So he goes to his apartment that, and everyone has thrown him a surprise birthday party. It's basically the Titans, and I'm trying to remember what his Chris, I'm sure you know that what his girlfriend's name was, the blonde.
You put me on the spot.
Yeah, I mean, I know who it is. I just can't think of the name.
But, is she the one with the magic powers and the Titans? Or no?
No, she has the magnetic powers?
The magnetic powers, yeah. But is that her?
I think so. I'm not 100% sure. I think so. But
yeah,
anyhow.
He was dating a Titan that had magnetic powers. I forget what her name was.
Yeah, and she's
she
not
almost,
in costume
she often,
anymore.
She often went by her name in the Titans comic.
Yeah, and it's not listed here at all, as far as I can see. I thought they said it once, but
it's
kind of
like a
it.
Jean Grey thing, you know? She went
exactly.
by her name instead of...
A code name?
Phoenix or...
Yeah.
Marvel Girl.
Well, anyhow, he comes back to his apartment where he had been shooed out earlier. So he's being sarcastic. He's like, oh my gosh, what a shock. It's like, I had no idea, even when you told me to make myself scarce. So it's the Titans, it's Cyborg and Changeling and Wonder Girl and Starfire and Nightwing are all there. And they're celebrating his 20th birthday party. He's no longer a teenager. So as they're just starting to celebrate, he gets a phone call and he has to he picks it up. Oh, Francine. There we go. I found the name.
Yeah, Francis. Yeah. Francis Kane.
Yep. She was the magnet girl, right?
Mm-hmm.
So he answers the phone and it's an emergency from a hospital. They want him to deliver a heart. So for a transplant across country. So he goes to the children's hospital and it's funny. They throughout the series, different people keep calling him Kid Flash, even though he's clearly wearing the primarily red and yellow striped Flash costume. And also his identity is not totally public, although he did introduce himself to the head of the children's hospital as Wally West. It's funny that they're all calling him Kid Flash, even though he's wearing the Flash costume. It's like they kind of know, almost like somehow know behind the scenes what happened to Barry Allen and the Kid Flash is wearing this costume now. But anyhow,
who's calling him?
The head of the children's hospital is just an old.
Oh yeah, that was kind of weird. Yeah.
Yeah. So he's they say, you know, we've got this. We've got a patient that needs this heart. There's a severe storm. We're not able to use aircraft. We need this within 5 hours. Could you deliver it? He's like, yeah, absolutely, of course. But he's like, it's 2,000 miles away. There's cost to me doing this. This isn't a casual favor. And so they're almost like put off and saying, well, you know, would it help if we told you who it is? It's like, no, I told you I would do it. It's just that I need something. You know, I'm going to need something too. And they're like, well, what do you want? And he asks for health insurance. He's like, listen, this is, you know, you're not a nonprofit organization. And he's like, you know, everyone else is getting paid, but you know, what about me? He's like, I've got medical bills and everything else. So, you know, let me hit, if I have problems, you know, I want to be taken care of. So they agree to this. And he's like, all right, it's going to take me about 3 hours to reach Seattle. And they're surprised to hear that because they, as far as they knew, he could run at the speed of light. And he's like, nope, not anymore. So my top speed is 705 miles per hour. So and he asks, and he says, one more thing, I'm going to need a plane ticket back because apparently he doesn't plan on taking the extra 3 hours to run all the way back again. And it's funny. One doctor, as he's running off, one doctor says, good luck, Kid Flash. And somebody next to him is like whispering, it's the Flash. So he starts running and runs out of Manhattan and he has a whole inner dialogue going, you know, at the time. And basically, you two are very aware, but in case anyone else isn't, you know, because of this crazy metabolism, that he has and changes, in that metabolism, he needs to renew, himself when he burns all of this energy. From running. So, you know, I mean, that's where those six baby Ruths came from. That's where some of this you know, there's a cost to doing this, came from, in terms of talking to the hospital, and, you know, he needs to replenish. So, anyhow, he's running, he's skipping, he's getting hungry, but he's like, I gotta, I'm just going to have to, hold on and get through. And, he ends up, getting out to, I believe it was, Wyoming, and he runs by, two men on kind of like the side of the, now the roads are totally snow covered at this point. And, he runs by these two men. One seems to be choking the other one. And he says in his inner monologue that, he's 20 miles down the road before the image of that actually registered. And so he puts the brakes on and runs back. And, it's just the guy, the chokee that is lying there. And he's saying the name Barney Sack. And, he's like, what happened? He's like, Barney Sack, but it's not his real name. He's like, I'm a private investigator. I run a check on Barney Sack. It's not his real name. We used a crime computer. Must have triggered an alarm. He lured me out here. And, so finally, I almost said Barry. Wally says, who is he? And the guy, says Vandal Savage. And, Vandal Savage comes out from the woods and tries to grab Wally, and Wally, gets out just in the nick of time. And there's, this panel with like lightning striking from behind, Vandal Savage. It's a small panel, but I swear to God, Geis's reference for that had to be, James Brolin from Amityville Horror when he totally was losing it. He looks just like, James Brolin, just looking mad, like crazy, like he did in Amityville Horror. I'm going to actually take a screenshot and send it to you guys. But anyhow, it was pretty cool. So in the meantime, all of a sudden, like Vandal disappears, like somehow teleports. And, Wally realizes that he can actually hear like the heart in the powered backpack that he's carrying, like moving around as he's running all over the place. He's like, what am I doing? It's like, I gotta get to Seattle. So he goes ahead and he makes a quick stop at the quick.
Hello?
Did we lose him again?
I lost him, and you lost him. I still see his face on the chat. Wow, holy crap, that's a big dove.
He's flipping himself.
Yeah, he's trying to get some action, right?
He's
getting pissed.
He chased it away because his chica's over there.
Oh, he's chasing the little one, right?
Is he crying?
I don't know. The bird is doing a weird, I don't know. It was like a dance.
Because I can tell you what that sounds like.
The dance?
No, and what it sounds like when doves cry.
Oh, I get it. Prince.
It sounds like... Din, 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 din.
So Rob's probably still... No, he's probably not talking because now he's gone.
No, because he would hear us saying we can't. Yeah.
Well, you can finish the story for us because you've read it so many times.
Yeah.
As soon as he posted the picture, at least it showed up on my phone, he got disconnected.
Yeah, right after that, yeah.
Yeah.
I guess we'd give it a couple, I don't know, see if you're going to try to come back, give it a couple minutes.
A minute or so.
But yeah, that.
Do you got bad weather out there or no?
No, it's not real windy or anything like that. So I don't know. It doesn't seem to be weather related. But yeah, that was interesting. Was interesting how they definitely tried to make Wally seem different, you know?
Yeah.
And he's kind of a jerk early on, and when Mike Baron is writing him.
Yeah, I think he changes with Messner Loebs.
Yeah, which I don't think this is necessarily the reason, but in like my headcanon, as they say, I kind of think of it like as being like typical of his age, you know? He's like late teens, early 20s, and like a lot of us think we know everything at that time in our lives, you know?
Yeah, and he was rich, too.
And he ends up striking it rich, so that doesn't help.
And hanging out with Chunk.
Okay, he says you'll have to tell the end of the issue, so I guess he's not hoping to make it back, so... So where was he? Ran into Vandal Savage.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because Amityville Horror. Do you have it up on the app?
Yeah, I brought it up because I mean it's the type of thing where it would come back to me as he's talking about it, but I can't just like pull it out of my brain. It's been a couple of years since. Yeah.
As you get older, it'll get worse.
Yeah. So Flash goes to report that guy that he found laying in the snow that got hurt by Vandal Savage. And so he goes to report it, and he says the sheriff's like, well, you better show us where you found this guy. And he says, no, I gotta get, because he's, you know, on a mission right now to get that heart to Seattle, and he can't just hang out. The sheriff's not having it and says he's going to, like, they want to lock him up. And, you know, obviously, Flash has no trouble getting away. So he's, this time he sees, like a turned over semi in snow, but he's like, I'm running late at this point. I can't stop to help this time. But he's also thinking to himself, like, Vandal Savage, like, he knows that's a big deal. And when he gets to Seattle, he gets the heart there, but he's like exhausted, you know, and they really try to bring in some limitations on the Flash's powers. You know, we're in this post-crisis era. They did that to Superman. They tried to rein in some of that stuff, and at least, you know, for now they did. And we definitely feel that strong in the early issues of this volume. And so they, a nurse wakes him up that they're, and he's been sleeping for 17 hours. So they let him sleep, and he says he's hungry with the whole food thing. And they say, today we are featuring beef stroganoff or baked chicken croquettes. It's like, no thanks. Is there a fast food restaurant nearby?
I do like beef stroganoff. That's good.
He goes to McDonald's and orders 5 double cheeseburgers and 4 chocolate malts, but declines fries. And he just eats in his costume and says he's going to a costume party. Then he goes back to the hospital after... apparently that was his breakfast, and zips in past security because they won't let anybody in, and he goes to meet the woman who's who he brought the heart for, doctor comes in, but he lets Wally stay for 10 minutes. She asks if she could see him in his costume. So he has the whole ring deal, like Barry, and he complies. And the woman who he brought the heart for she's like a known author, and he's read her books and stuff. He's like, "Do you mind if I have some of these chocolates?" She's got like chocolates somebody brought her on the he eats all of them, like it's like a whole pound of chocolates. Well, since she's like knows history and stuff in the books that she's written, he asks her about Vandal Savage, and she tells him about stuff that, you know, we know as comic fans, and whether, you know, she doesn't know if he really exists or not. Again, you know, when the doctor comes to ask him to leave, he says, "Kid Flash, you'll have to leave now." And he says, "It's just Flash, Doctor." So while he's on his flight back that he asks for, and he's reading one of that woman's books about the Vandal Savage stuff, but he's also looking at a magazine. He's got a crossword puzzle up, and it's kind of cute. They, like, if you look at the answers, it's like Joe Kubert, Deadman, Giordano, Orlando, Garcia, like they're all like creators and characters of DC. So somebody tries to hijack the plane, Wally takes care of them in like 3 seconds, and people are just like wondering what the heck happened. So he asked for an ice pack for his hand because he just like used it to knock a bunch of people out, and orders 6 dinners, and they're like, 6 dinners? He says he has a stomach condition. So he gets back home, and nobody's waiting. It's 9 o'clock at night when he gets to LaGuardia, and nobody's there. He says, he thinks I'll call Francine tomorrow. He takes a cab to St. Mary's, and they x-ray his hand, and it's just sprained. So he gets back to his house, and it's like still decorated for his birthday, and he's like, well, at least it seems like everybody else had a good time since he had to leave. He sits down with some TV dinners and turns on the TV, and they're just as they're announcing the lottery winners, and there's a panel of his face like in shock, and he goes like scrambling through the like papers and stuff on the floor and finds his lotto ticket and holds it up, and it matches the numbers. And he's like, everything is now different. He realizes there's like still an unopened present on the table that he hadn't noticed. And he opens it up, and there's a heart inside the box with a bunch of blood. And he says, the smell, this is not from Francine. Before he opens it, he realizes that, you know, the present is not from her. So he shoots out his costume out of his ring as he senses something behind him, and someone says, "Put it on." And it's Vandal Savage standing there in his house and says, "Live as the Flash, die as the Flash. Next month, Vandal in the house." So, yeah, first retrocast tag team.
Yeah, it's the first time that you had to hand over a review.
Yeah.
We actually had a question too, and I don't know how this pertains to you, because I've never heard you talk about commissions, but if you could get an artist to do a commission, what would that artist be that's an expensive one and one that is an affordable one? And I don't even know if you'd know, but you can have fun with it. I mean,
yeah.
Mine would be Gilliam March to have a commission done by, is my expensive one, and then my unexpensive one. They're all expensive, but the one that I can afford would be Andrew Peepoy.
Yeah, I guess you could say like relatively.
Yeah, relatively. In terms of you, but do you have an answer?
Do you want to say what Rob said? Because
yeah, Rob
mine
is
goes off of him.
Rob is George Perez, and he can't get that one for sure. Not just because of affordability, but because he's retired.
Yeah, he doesn't do them anymore.
Yeah, so his is Bob Layton, which is a good choice.
Yeah.
I don't know what his rates are to know, because I've never asked, but he does, like, I'm Facebook friends with him, and he does a lot of cool stuff.
Yeah, that's, George Perez is a good one. He's definitely, like, someone that would come to my mind, but, someone sort of similar, like, oh, you know, Jerry Ordway would be really awesome.
That's,
I was going to say...
that's the one I should have said for the second one, because I've had Andrew Peepoy, but I would love to have an Ordway.
And do you say he's more affordable?
I don't know. I've never asked. Yeah. He falls into the Bob Layton category. I would expect it to be in the 300 range, and that's like just guessing. Like a full figure, but I don't know. I see his stuff though, and like Ordway I started to first see his art, I preferred like John Byrne over Ordway, but now things have changed and I prefer Ordway over John Byrne. Like my style.
Yeah,
is
I would
just,
say I do too. Yeah.
I love Ordway stuff.
Yeah,
that's a good one. And it's one that's really appealed to me, because his Superman work and some of the stuff, like there's times I'll even go out of my way to get a variant cover because Ordway did it.
Mm-hmm.
I just love his, it's very distinctive. And he did a lot of the Power Shazam covers too. And he did a lot of, what do you call it? The All-Star Squadron, right?
Yeah, he was definitely involved in that, yeah. Did a bunch, yeah. I don't know what's affordable, what's not. I mean, I guess I would just, maybe I'll do one that's, you know, artist from earlier on, and then, which is easier for me. Like, I can kind of think of several, like, of that era.
Of that era,
like,
yeah.
Rob said George Perez. I thought of Jerry Ordway, but I was also thinking Garcia Lopez before that. Those kind of guys.
Are getting harder to obtain because of his age. But
and so I don't know, newer artists, younger artists as well, but like maybe somebody that did cross my mind because I was listening to his podcast the other day. That's around my age, I think, is Ed Piskor. That'd be cool. I like his style a lot.
I don't know if you'd ever get into Red Room, but damn, that's a good book.
I did see that was something he's doing now, which I might check out. Like I like his style a lot.
It is very, though, and I don't know if it's... I've never heard you talk about this stuff, but it's very dark web violent. Like, that's what it is. But it's something I haven't seen him do, because he's done, you know, like the rap history.
Yeah,
and then
like
he's
the,
done
the
WYSIWYG and Grand Design on the X-Men and stuff. But Red Room is something I've never experienced. I like it because it's something that's not like an historical thing that I've read.
Mm.
So... it's dark fiction and definitely in torturous things. It's crazy, the dark web. But his art style in it is very hyper detailed. like I can't compare it to the rap one because I didn't read it, but I did see Grand Design and the other one, and this one's just really hyper detailed.
Nice.
Do you listen to that podcast?
I just listened to it. I watched actually because they have episodes on YouTube.
Yeah, that's what I was going to ask you because I don't have time to do the visual. Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. But like when I'm doing activities, I have time for podcasts, and they are so visual that I didn't enjoy them as a podcast. In other words, if I was visually seeing what they were doing and showing, then I think I would dig it more. But because of it, I was listening to the podcast version, I couldn't get into it.
No, I just I watched their interview with Eric Larson. I think it was from like last year or something because it was – I was going back to DC Everything Else. I didn't even really like – Yeah, I had never watched any of them, and Joe mentioned that they had interviewed a bunch of the like image
creators.
Original image guys on there, and I decided to check out that one. It was really good.
Yeah, those guys are good, man. They have a very broad history of comics. I like them because they do a lot of '90s stuff. Like,
yeah, and
it's hitting my sweet spot right now. I love the '90s comics. They're so different, but I think they're like a combination of what I liked in the writing and a combination of what I like in art. So. Now they're so compressed, though. Like, I agree with you. Well, not all of them. Like, when I feel like I read some of the DC books, I feel like I get, like, when I read a Joker issue, I feel like I get, like, a full sitting, a full plate. When I read a Rorschach or Strange Adventures, I feel like I'm getting a full plate of filling in some stuff and that, you know, that's part of the story.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a lot of books that I'm reading, especially in the X-Men world, and I'm like, man, that could have at least been one issue, and you said it in four, like, and you can really read the four and describe it in like a sentence, and you can't really like flesh out a lot of the meat, unless you went into like hyper detail. Of things that really don't matter, in my opinion.
Yeah, you read an issue and then you look at the clock and it's like 5 or 6 minutes went by and you're like, wow.
Yeah.
I read it on the app, so I'm like, glad I didn't pay $4 for that.
Yeah, I don't... It's different, for sure. I hope we get to a point where things change again because comics evolve, and I hope we get back to the. That's why I think I like the Strange Adventures and the Rorschach and Joker because they're pretty dense reads. They're not just like. There's a lot of stuff in there.
Yeah, it's not all. Comics, you know, are as decompressed, but
I know
the other two are Tom King, who does Joker.
Yeah, Joker is Tynan, James Tynan, yeah, and Gilliam March. So I mean, he's God. I love March's art. That Carmen book from Image. I absolutely adore it, and he's writing it too, and it's just so much depth and the things to think about. Like, There's two books that deal with life and death right now that I'm really digging. It just makes you think a lot, you know, about life in general and afterlife and stuff like that. And that's Carmen and the Many Lives of Lila Starr. They're so about life and death that they interest me a lot. And it's stuff that you can like discuss a lot or think about. And I like to like read a comic book and then just like think about it and digest it for hours afterwards. Cause then you feel like you got a good helping of data, you know, like a good story that makes you think. I like when that happens.
Nice.
Well, we can wrap this one up. You can reach us at geekbrunchpodcast.com. You can hit us up on Twitter at MythMakingETC, at Mike Myers Brunch, and at Rob Krieger. And thanks to Chris for having his app ready and being able to to tag team on that, because Rob got knocked off twice in that episode. And weird, though, because usually when people get knocked off, you have, like, symptoms of them going in and out or something like that. But he was just losing his internet entirely and couldn't complete. And he had one more book to talk about. He was going to talk about Green Lantern 51 or something like that. Yeah, Green Lantern 51. And I had one more too, but we can wrap this one up. And I think that's all the information that you need to get a hold of us. The best way is Twitter, or on the I do check the websites. You can do that in our Facebook, and I forward it to the, like, Chris doesn't do Facebook, Rob does, but if something does come up there, I can forward it on to them. So thank you for listening, and join us next time. And it was good talking to you again, Chris. I hope you have a more calm day of fireworks, because I know why you feel when your dog doesn't feel good. So
yeah, it's probably not going to be great today, but hopefully after today it'll get better.
It either will or it won't because of Monday. Like, people having Monday off may bleed over. I don't know.
Yeah, but, that's kind of the timing kind of sucks, because it's on Sunday. People were doing them yesterday, and they'll do them today, you know.
Yeah.
2 days, we got 2 days in a row.
Right.
But, oh, well.
Now, hopefully they won't start any fires. That's the important part.
Yeah.
We've been getting a lot of moisture. Surprisingly, it's been raining here every day. We haven't had this much afternoon rain in such a long time, at least consistent. Today, this afternoon, Barb was going to make some chicken and grill some, but we're supposed to have afternoon hail storms, so we'll see what happens.
Yeah, you guys get hail out there a lot more than we do.
The hail scares me because of that one time we got pummeled, destroyed all our outdoor furniture, and it was so bad that
I remember the pictures from that.
Yeah, if you just walk down the street, you'd see people's cars, and they were just annihilated with bumps. But it was so powerful and so big that it was cracking their, like, side view mirrors and windows. Like, you saw a bunch of windows blown out and stuff. I mean, it was insane.
Nuts.
Yeah, how people lost skylights and house windows, and it gets insane. And I don't want to ever go through that again.
No. I don't blame you.
Yeah. All right. Well, have a good one. Take it easy.
Yeah, you too. Take
care.
All right, bye. Okay. Bye.